Today on Annenberg Radio News.
If you allow the broken windows to remain or the graffiti to remain up, it just attracts more. It attracts more vandalism, more problems.
This South LA resident oversees courtrooms by day and by night paints over graffiti-tagged walls. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, March 29th, 2012. I'm Benjamin Gottlieb and as always, thank you for joining us. The LA City Controller released the findings of a city audit today. The report finds the city incurred $7 million of unexplained gas charges for city vehicles over a two-year period. Reporter Melissa Runnels investigates.
In a time of climbing gas prices, Los Angeles, like many other cities, spends a lot of money on fuel for city-owned vehicles, $29 million a year on gasoline, natural gas, and diesel. City Controller Wendy Gruhl's audit finds that $7 million of that was spent on fuel that was unaccounted for. This despite having spent $12 million since 1999 on an expensive automated tracking system. The tracking system isn't working, the audit says, because departments haven't been using the monitoring capabilities in the system.
What's clear is that some managers and city leaders were asleep at the switch.
What's more, Gruhl says, the system has too many loopholes. For instance, fuel access cards that allow overrides were easily available to employees. They were used over 50,000 times during the two-year audit period, which started in 2009. Overrides by keypad entry were also a problem.
Although overrides should only be used when all normal methods of procuring fuel have failed, they accounted for nearly $4 million worth of transactions in this audit period.
Additionally, there were 94 cases of odometer tampering, which could have masked unauthorized trips.
The best case scenario of this audit is that department managers did a poor job in keeping records of the fuel. Worst case scenario is that there's theft of the city's fuel resources.
The audit is also being sent to the mayor and the city attorney for review. Gruhl is running for mayor in next year's race. Melissa Runnels, Annenberg Radio News.
Rumors about sexual abuse in LAUSD schools are still swirling. As Rosalie Murphy reports, one of the lawyers defending victims from Miramonte Elementary raised new questions today.
It's been almost 2 months since elementary school teacher Mark Burnt was arrested. He was the first of two from Miramonte Elementary, and his arrest set off a wave of sexual abuse allegations against LAUSD teachers. The lawyer defending Burnt's alleged victims, Brian Claypool, held a news conference today about what he thinks is yet another case.
But what it did is it triggered this feeling again that that's kind of how the situation with Mark Burns started. People coming forward, gee, you know, this guy has a reputation. Nothing was done to take those complaints serious. We could have avoided the entire Miramonte tragedy.
Claypool says a teacher from a middle school in the San Fernando Valley contacted him last week. That teacher overheard a conversation between two students about a fellow teacher who may have sexually abused them. Then the first teacher reported his colleague to school administrators. Last month, LAUSD Superintendent John Deasy promised to remove teachers accused of sexual abuse. Claypool says that hasn't happened in this case.
Parents drop their kids off at these schools. We would have thought that since Miramonte, that things would have changed.
The school in question declined to comment, calling the case a personnel matter. LAUSD also declined to comment, and the community's LAPD station said no investigation was underway. But should people know about internal accusations like these? But Richard Hendrickson, Freedom of Information Chair of the Los Angeles Society of Professional Journalists, says LAUSD should start the investigation. After that, it's a little murky.
The third-party review should take place at the end of that administrative process, and it should be mandated, even if the process reaches conclusion that no, that the allegations are unfounded, someone else should be looking at that. And I don't think that someone else should be the press. I think that someone else should be an administrative authority.
Hendrickson says rumors are to be expected. But once formal accusations are filed, he thinks the stories should be publicly reported.
The parents, they've got to think seriously about the consequences of making a false allegation. So I would think they would not make false allegations.
And as this case unfolds, or doesn't unfold, it shows that people are trying to find a balance between protecting children and the reputations of innocent teachers. Rosalie Murphy, Annenberg Radio News.
Today marked the opening of the Lacretz Villas, an apartment complex in Silver Lake. As Lucas Alexander reports, it was built to move the homeless off the streets and into affordable housing.
Imagine paying as low as $56 a month for a plush one-bedroom apartment. Well, thanks to Path Ventures and many others, 48 homeless people have been afforded the opportunity to live in their own house and pay just 30% of their income as rent.
Where there is a will, there is a way.
Councilman Eric Garcetti explained that this project was about more than just taking advantage of an area full of warehouses.
In this overbuilt city, there are still so many opportunities like this, which was just a vacant lot a few years ago, that we can take these parcels of land and transform them. But we don't just transform the parcels, we transform the lives of the people who live here.
One individual whose prayer was answered by the new complex is Calvin Schwartz.
When they say they put people in your path to help you out at the most dire need of your time, it has been true.
After over 3 years of homelessness, the new opportunity that is Lacretz Villas has helped put Schwartz's life back on track.
Thank you for giving me a tomorrow outlook. Thank you for giving me a stepping stone for tomorrow. Thank you for giving me another day.
Residents like Schwartz are expected to pay 30% of their total income for rent, thanks to the federal Section 8 housing voucher for low-income citizens. And Garcetti says this is the future in housing the homeless.
I don't care if you don't ethically see this issue.
Councilman Garcetti continues.
But if you're just a hard-nosed budget expert, it is time for us to end homelessness because it is less expensive and it is the right thing to do. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And Path Ventures already has plans for two similar complexes to be built within the next few years. Lucas Alexander, Annenberg Radio News.
Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa and the L.A. School District are launching Food for Thought, a campaign to bring breakfast into the classroom. As Nick Edmonds reports, officials hope it will improve the scholastic performance of L.A.'s underprivileged children.
You probably used to hear it from your parents all the time.
Turns out our moms were right. Breakfast really is the most important meal of the day.
So important that Mayor Villaraigosa has joined the LAUSD and community organization Inner City Struggle to form Food for Thought. The new program is primarily funded by the USDA and looks to offer LAUSD students breakfast in the classroom. Food for Thought will give students free breakfast at the start of each day, offering healthy options such as fresh fruit, whole wheat muffins, and 1% milk. But isn't it the parents' responsibility to feed their children in the morning? LAUSD Superintendent John Deasy says not necessarily.
It is a community's responsibility, so that if a parent would not have the means, then we wrap our arms around the student and make sure that no one goes hungry.
LAUSD Board President Monica Garcia believes Food for Thought will increase attendance, decrease obesity, and help students reach her.
Now for the weather. We're looking at partly cloudy skies this evening with lows in the mid-50s. Tomorrow should be mostly sunny with a comfortable high of 72 and overnight lows in the 50s. Saturday will also be a bit cloudy with lows dipping into the high 40s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, the former press secretary and speechwriter for Cesar Chavez shares his thoughts on the legacy of the civil rights activist. In large cities, graffiti is a major problem for police, residents, and the people hired to clean it up. But in the West Adams neighborhood of South Los Angeles, one man, armed with a can of spray paint, doesn't mind the challenge. Heather Ritchie has the story.
Wait a second. There was an urban legend that there was a judge who was painting out graffiti.
Judge Robert Totten's not a stranger to someone calling him an urban legend. Every night, he walks the streets with his three big Great Danes and cleans off the graffiti in his neighborhood. Totten isn't hired to do this. He does it purely to make it look better and safer for his family and neighbors. He summed up his beliefs by quoting former LAPD police chief Bill Bratton.
It's a broken window. If you allow the broken windows to remain, or the graffiti to remain up, it just attracts more. It attracts more vandalism, more problems.
He doesn't need much. only a couple of washcloths, paint thinner, and spray paint. If the graffiti is on a gray or white surface, he'll just spray paint over it. Otherwise, he'll scrub until it's gone.
It just takes me 2 seconds, and he's gone.
Totten says the graffiti is gang-related, and he has caught people in the act.
I remember stepping out, okay, come on, guys, enough's enough, and they go, white boy, you're next.
These types of vandals doing the graffiti end up in his courtroom. During the day, he is a commissioner for juveniles, ruling on cases like murder, robbery, and vandalism. One tagger I spoke with that wishes to not be identified says that him tagging an area illustrates his loyalty to his gang, their brotherhood, and their territory. There are some nights when Totten will clean an area, and the next day, there's graffiti again. But that doesn't bother him. He just goes back and cleans it off again.
I get satisfaction about knowing that they're not getting anything out of it, except putting themselves at risk.
Totten has tried to bring the issue to police, but says police have to weigh what's more important at the time, catching taggers or solving robberies and murders. In 1990, LAPD created PACE, Police Assisted Community Enhancement Program. The program is designed to battle graffiti through different city agencies. When graffiti is seen, LAPD fills out a form and forwards it to the proper city agency to alleviate the problem. LAPD was unavailable for comment. Totten hopes giving back to his community will slowly remove all the bad tensions in the area.
Positive energy is going to win out.
Until authorities can do more, Totten says he doesn't mind people thinking he's an urban legend. Heather Ritchie, Annenberg Radio News.
California lawmakers don hoodies this morning to pay their respects to Trayvon Martin, the Florida teenager shot to death last month by a neighborhood WASH volunteer. Residents of South LA and USC students joined the national protest today. Conrad Wilton reports.
I am Trayvon Martin! I am Trayvon Martin!
It's been 32 days since neighborhood watchman George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin in Sanford, Florida. Zimmerman claims he acted in self-defense, but USC student Matthew Gray doesn't buy Zimmerman's argument.
Self-defense is just not going to fly with me because he's at least 100 pounds heavier than Trayvon.
According to the Sanford police report, Zimmerman claims Martin looks suspicious wearing a hoodie in the rain inside a gated community. Police say Martin was unarmed and was only carrying a packet of Skittles and an iced tea. But Zimmerman chose to follow him, and an altercation ensued. Eddie Jones, the president of the Los Angeles Civil Rights Association, led a protest today in Crenshaw.
How dare Zimmerman have the audacity to take a loaded 9mm weapon? That's a premeditated conspiracy to commit murder on a young person who is completely innocent.
But according to some eyewitness accounts and a police investigation, Zimmerman may not have killed Martin in cold blood. According to the Orlando Sentinel, the police reports say Martin punched Zimmerman in the face and then slammed Zimmerman's head against the sidewalk. However, the Orlando Sentinel released a video from a security camera that shows police escorting a handcuffed Zimmerman into an interrogation room the night after the killing. Zimmerman had no visible head injuries.
You did not get your face scraped across the sidewalk, I promise, because it would be noticeable.
Rachel Zelensky is the president of a brand new USC club called the Alliance of White Anti-Racists Everywhere. She says Trayvon's case is a manifestation of American institutional racism.
You know, this isn't the first case where something like this has happened. There's a history in the United States of, like, black life not being valued the same as white life.
Tonight, USC students will gather on campus for a candlelight vigil in Trayvon's honor. This is Conrad Wilton, Annenberg Radio News.
This Saturday marks Cesar Chavez Day, when Californians will celebrate the founder of the United Farm Workers Union and his lifetime commitment to civil rights and labor activism. This year also marks the 50th anniversary of the founding of the UFW. Mark Grossman is a former speechwriter and personal aide to Cesar Chavez. I spoke with him earlier today about the current state of California's farm workers.
The workforce today is uniformly Latino, immigrant, and undocumented. There have not been American citizens and legal residents in farm labor in any appreciable numbers in decades. The biggest concern that farm workers have today isn't so much winning better pay and benefits, it's getting a green card. It's being able to legalize their status, because It is that immigration status that makes them so vulnerable to being abused and exploited.
And Mark, to piggyback on what you just said about immigration status, what do you think is one of the biggest injustices in the workplace that farm workers face today?
If you're a worker and you work more than eight hours a day or more than 40 hours a week, you get paid overtime, not farm workers. Farm workers have to work 10 hours a day and at least 50 hours a week before they get overtime. Well, the UFW wants to eliminate that shameful exclusion of farm workers from eight-hour overtime with a bill this year that we're gonna that the union is going to put on Governor Brown's desk.
As someone who knew Cesar Chavez on an intimate level, when remembering him on this holiday, what are some of the major things we should take away?
Of course, Cesar has been honored in so many communities and so many public places have been named for him. But I think the greatest monument to Cesar Chavez is not on a street sign or in concrete. It's really in the inspiration that he placed in his own people first and then in millions of Americans from all walks of life who never worked on a farm. The inspiration to work for change, the inspiration to be selfless, to engage in self-sacrifice and be of service to others.
And Mark, as a personal aide and friend to Cesar Chavez for many years, can you tell us about one particular incident that stands out amongst the rest that really captures the man that was Cesar Chavez?
I remember years ago, a reporter followed Cesar around for a couple days from a national news magazine, saw him with farm workers at rallies and marches and events, and workers would mob him and ask him to sign autographs of T-shirts and flags and leaflets, whatever they had, or take pictures of him with their families using these old Instamatic cameras. This reporter later in an interview asked Cesar what accounted for all the affection and respect farm workers showed him in public. Cesar paused and smiled his easy smile, and he just said, "The feeling is mutual."
That was Mark Grossman, Communications Director for the Cesar Chavez Foundation. This morning, Mayor Antonio Villagrosa and actress Jamie Lee Curtis announced the launch of a program to help L.A. prepare for a natural disaster. The three-year campaign by the American Red Cross received a $1.5 million donation from Edison International. The campaign aims to boost the number of shelter spaces and train disaster volunteers and increase the city's capacity to distribute up to 4 million meals a day during a disaster. 18 Mega Millions drawings have come and gone without a jackpot winner. And now, the jackpot for tomorrow's drawing has reached $540 million. That makes it the largest jackpot in world history. The previous largest Mega Millions jackpot was $390 million, drawn back in 2007. Now we check in with Jennifer Kendall to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Jennifer?
Thank you, Ben. As was mentioned before, USC students are hosting a candlelight vigil for Trayvon Martin tonight. We're going to have a reporter live at Tommy Trojan with the latest on that. Also in Redondo Beach tonight, rescue crews worked all day to free a gray whale caught in fishing lines. Find out more about that and much more coming up on ATVN tonight.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. Listen to the entire version of our story on LAUSD's Food for Thought program on the web at annenbergradio.org. And that's it for us today on Thursday. We had help today from Madeline Lindsay. Esther King is our producer. Emily Frost is our executive producer. And from all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb. Thank you so much and enjoy your weekend. We'll be right back.